WLAK 1260 AM Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Marina Roy. The Israeli Hostage Center confirms two more hostages have been released by Hamas. They're two elderly Israeli women. The White House says it's working for the release of U.S. citizens still held by Hamas.
We still have about 10 unaccounted for Americans, and it's not exactly clear to us where those 10 people are.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
There's just a lot of effort going on, a lot of conversations and discussions with partners in the region, and I think it's just best if we don't detail that.
A mother and daughter from the Chicago area were released last week. ABC's Matt Gutman is in Tel Aviv.
13 members of that single family were either killed or kidnapped, and in so many ways that one family is still being held captive by Hamas, fearful that if they reveal any details about the conditions under which they're released family members were held, their captors could take vengeance on the family members still under Hamas's control.
This is ABC News. It's usually turbulence that rocks an airplane, but not for one JetBlue plane.
A mishap at New York's JFK Airport Sunday night after JetBlue Flight 662 landed and taxied to the gate. The company said in a statement that as passengers were deplaning, there was a shift in weight on the plane, prompting the aircraft's tail to tip backward and the nose to lift up in the air and then come back down. The company says there were no injuries reported, that it's reviewing the incident, and that it's taken the plane out of service for inspection. Mark Remillard, ABC News, New York.
It turns out the nation's best bagel does not come from New York City, but from Dallas, Texas. Oren Solomon's Starship Bagel took the top prize at the annual New York Bagel Fest. He says the idea that New York City water makes them better is a myth. A Milwaukee comic book shop has a rare copy of the first appearance of Spider-Man. The comic book written by Marvel Comics icon Stan Lee was published in 1962. Rena Roy, ABC News.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin State Senate will take up a funding proposal for American Family Field in Milwaukee on Wednesday. According to CHAFER News, lawmakers may discuss potential amendments to the plan before the vote. As it stands now, the over $500 million plan to fund renovations of the stadium will guarantee the Milwaukee Brewers will remain in Wisconsin until at least 2050. Governor Tony Evers and local leaders in Milwaukee have already expressed their support of the proposed plan. Dane County Circuit Judge Frank Remington has ruled that the former state Supreme Court justice fighting a subpoena to appear in court over advice she provided Assembly Speaker Robin Voss on impeaching newly elected Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz will not have to provide testimony. Judge Remington ruled that he would first hear arguments on whether the lawsuit alleging open meetings violations by the panel of former justices assembled by Speaker Voss to investigate impeachment proceedings should be dismissed. And that's what you need to know. I'm James Kelly, WLAK News.
Get 11% off everything now at Menards. Update your home to make life easier with smart home products from Fight Electric. Always know who's at your door with a 1080p HD video doorbell. Receive alerts when motion is detected and see live video right on your phone from anywhere. Right now, pick up a 1080p HD video doorbell for just $49.97 after 11% off. Good through October 29th. Savings are mail-in rebate. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
The Todd Alba Show.
What makes our society great is that we can believe in something bigger than ourselves. Doesn't matter whether it's a soccer team or whether it's a political movement or whether it's a public school, whether it's a neighborhood PTA, a bake sale. It's about interacting with our friends and neighbors and making our communities better for having come together around a common cause.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the
OptUS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Palette.com.
Portions of the following program may be pre-recorded.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Good to be with you today, Matt and Patrick. Jam-packed today. Jeremy Norton is going to be kind enough to join us today. Jeremy is currently, he had Station 17 in South Minneapolis as a captain down there. He has written his book, Trauma Sponges, Dispatches from the Scarred Heart of Emergency Response. Jeremy Norton joining us here a little bit later on this hour. And then in the 4 o'clock hour, Matt Robeson is going to be joining us as well, talking about his latest Newsweek article. Hello, Patrick. I see you are wearing your Vikings jersey.
That's right.
Ready for tonight. And the shellacking we are about to take at the hands of the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, a lot of people are, well, including myself, are a little more optimistic because the 49ers will be down a couple key players on offense, but we still have to score on their defense, and that's probably not going to go very well.
Has Kirk Cousins stopped throwing on third and long 3 yards? And if he hasn't stopped doing that, we're not going to win this game. I'm no math whiz, but if it's 12 yards and you only throw 3 yards, your entire game plan is that the defense is going to let you get the other 9 yards. They generally don't oblige. So, you know, I don't know, maybe throw the ball 12 yards. I'm just a sucker on the sidelines, I guess. Did you get a chance at all to get out this weekend?
I did a little bit last night. We went to this Vietnamese restaurant on Eat Street in Minneapolis, and the
Which one?
Was Quang.
Quang's is fantastic, man.
Yeah, the banh mi was life changing. I'd never been there. It was really good.
Yes, it's very tasty. Did you go out? Did you see any of the nice colors on the trees and everything?
Yeah, I did that on Friday. Actually, I did some leaf peeping. And it was, it's such a creepy term, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. You've just taken a delightful hobby and turned it into, I'm watching you, trees.
It was a really, it's been a, it was kind of like, in 2 days, and you know, you talked extensively about that last week, but it pretty much went from green to everything's on the ground.
Well, I went yesterday. On Saturday night, I ended up over right in Bryn Mawr. There's a park there, which is right off of 394. It's right there. It's the park right across from Lowry Hill. And, we were looking around there, and the leaves were good. And they were good. Some of the neighborhoods over there, stunning, gorgeous, just, you know, that's when you try to sell your house because, you know, you fall in love with the neighborhoods when the trees look so nice. But yesterday, I decided, okay, I'm going to go try Lake Minnetonka Regional Park. This is one of the Three Rivers parks. It's on the south side of the lake. I think it's into Minnetrista, out Highway 7. And you got to, I think, turn onto 44 or 41. I can't remember which road it is. But you go north and it's right there. And I did the West Trail. I could not take a bad picture. I've had only this happen a few times in my career as a person that's trying to take photographs. I've only had it happen once or twice where I could not take a bad picture. Sometimes it helps where you are at. I remember it was Rocky Mountain National Park. It's kind of hard to screw up a picture at Rocky Mountain National Park. There it is, stunning views in every freaking direction. It is really gorgeous. The same thing goes for when you go, you know, like to place like I went to Zion, you point a camera, take the picture. It's hard to even comprehend how beautiful everything is. The last time I had this happen where I came back and I just looking at the camera roll and I'm like, how did I just not take any bad pictures whatsoever? And this was about a year ago. I was in South Carolina and went strolling on the city of Beaufort, their city pier there, right on Beaufort Harbor, right off on the Atlantic there. And just was a nice sunset, ended up taking a bunch of pictures. I couldn't take a bad picture. I could not take a bad picture. Every picture came out fantastic. Same thing happened yesterday. Just every picture I took, just gorgeous oranges and yellows and reds, just stunning. And yeah, one or two of them, some of the best pictures I've ever taken. I'm not alone. I mean, I don't know if you've been up on social media. I've seen a lot of fantastic photos from yesterday. A lot of people were out enjoying that. I hope you get out and get the chance. I mean, it sounds like we're going to take a cool turn here. And when that does happen, my guess is the leaves are just going to drop completely out of all the trees across the metro area. So I hope you do get a chance to get out there and enjoy that a little bit because it is spectacular. It is horribly late. I was talking to an old guy. He said he remembered one year where all the leaves were out of the trees by the end of September. He said it was that cold. It was a cold year. He said it was like 1940s, 1950s. And he said we didn't have to rake again after it was like October 3rd. Here it is. It's October 23rd. And I still don't have, even if I tried to rake, I wouldn't get a pile in my backyard. I just checked the gutters. We're supposed to get some rain tonight. I checked the gutters. They're fine. This is weird. Speaking of weird, Gopher football. I'm just going to mention this really quick and get the sports thing out of the way. All right. So, Patrick quickly throws his headset on there. Patrick, why don't you give us your, what exactly happened, that one play that happened in the Gopher football game and how the outrage over this call I don't quite get because it seems like it's pretty cut and dry as far as the rule book.
So with about a minute and a half left to go, the Gophers were punting. They were up only 2 points in the game at the time. It was 12-10. They were winning. And they punted the ball back to Iowa. It was a bouncing punt that sort of rolled toward the sideline, and the guy for Iowa who was back to return it was running over toward the ball. He was making sort of a circular motion with his hand, and this, looks pretty innocuous, but this is going to come back to be a big deal later. He picked up the ball, somehow was not tackled by about six different Gophers, and takes it back for what appears to be an improbable Iowa game-winning touchdown that everyone goes, oh, Minnesota has done it again. So everybody gets confused because the officials say we're reviewing this play, and they spent a long time looking at it because everybody thought, are they just looking to see if he was in bounds? And it was pretty clear that he was, so well, what's going on? So the official comes back and says the returner was making a gesture with his left hand, therefore the ball is dead at the spot he picked it up, so there's no touchdown. Iowa doesn't get that game-winning touchdown, which their offense was as bad as Minnesota's was on Saturday. They throw an interception.
Oh, they were worse, actually. We beat them. They were worse. We beat them. Okay, so and you get the kind of the gist of it here. Now, I just want to say this because, an Iowa fan just showed how here's one little acknowledgement for you for college football. The bigger the school in the smaller the town, the more drunks you have at that game. I can tell you this from experience. I was on a flagship station for one of the Big 12 teams at Iowa State. I got to travel around with those with the broadcast crew. When you are in a bigger city like Minneapolis with a big program there, generally you don't have that. But when you get into these small towns where they have these big schools, the only thing to do starting at 8 a.m. is to drink like fish. And I can tell you right now, there was a lot of people at Iowa that were drunk as skunks, and that did not help the crowd. The reason you have this quick little rule is because it has nothing to do with some nitpicky thing. No, this is actually clear cut. You can't make any hand gestures because too many times guys would say, I think initially was you raised your right hand, you waved it above your head, and that was a fair catch rule, if I'm not mistaken. What happened was guys would start waving their left hand, put it over their head, and they'd wave it, and basically they would be able to pick up the ball and run into the end zone, which then led to the obvious problem. There were people who were calling for fair catches that got planted into next month, and they realized that you can't have any kind of hand gesture because if you do it and it's not designated as a fair catch is be the case. Now, Iowa's problem seems to be that they were told that the review, the instant replay review, was about about whether or not the guy had gone out of bounds. That was what they were upset about. What they came back and they said, well, he waved his hand. Their argument was, well, even though that's a legit problem and that was, it's clearly in the rule book, that because they only looked at whether he was out of bounds or not, even if they saw something like that in the review, they should never have qualified that. That has to be something that's asked for by the other team. Now, mind you, we're in the final 2 minutes, so I think that in NCAA rules, they can review anything they want. But their argument was that even though it was the right call, they should have never made the right call because, well, they lost. I just don't know what to say about that. I don't quite know what to say. I mean, it's, and granted, I'm going to be blunt with you, Iowa people, because if it was the other way around, if Minnesota had the same thing and they got called on that, you'd be like, yeah, that's in the rule book. That's it. You can't have that. That's a fair call. So, yeah, I just want to get this out of the way. It wasn't a game for the freaking ages anyway. I don't think anyone, either one at Iowa or Minnesota's putting that on their game day package to encourage recruits to come to Minnesota or Iowa. No one is doing that. It was a crap game, but to act like that, to all of a sudden get home on, I mean, one of the reasons I didn't post that much this weekend is because I just saw the constant belly aching from Iowa fans. Oh, we were robbed. Just relax, chill, get over it. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. David is in California. I wanted to chime in today. Hello, David.
Oh, hey, Matt. Yeah, I was interested in the weather you were talking about, but, you know, hearing about that game, yep. I wonder if it'll have a replay in the Akashic Records.
What's that?
Well, the Akashic Records, that's like the book of life.
Oh, okay.
You know, everything that ever happened and everything that will happen.
Now we're getting into the Far Side cartoon. We're getting to the Far Side cartoon kind of level of, okay. No, I don't think that's going to, I don't think that that's going to happen. I don't think anyone was proud of that. I don't even think the makers of football are like, oh God, this game? No, we're not going, we're just going to pass this one by anyway.
Hey, well, you know, I'm old enough to remember when the invasive species of red ants, army ants, were crossing the Texas border, and now they're up into Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about having an especially warm autumn, you know, I think the army ants are, they may or may not have crossed into Kansas at this point. But there are invasive species that are going to have a heck of a time, or the old original species are going to have a heck of a time facing off against the invasive species.
Well, go ahead, David, just really quick.
Well, I was just going to suggest, you know, if you've got gardeners listening, maybe you've got, you know, the opportunity to gather seeds of the native plants and either plant them a little further north or, you know, do what you can to stabilize their lives because this strange weather, you know, it is climate change. And I don't know if you've had an influx of, say, woolly mammoths. You know,
no.
Those babies, you know, they
time,
may have
David,
gotten revived.
David, the time passed them by. Thank you, David. I appreciate the phone call. Well, let's you talk about fire ants. I remember that too, by the way. I remember when they crossed into Texas. That was probably in the 80s. And now they've made it all the way up into Oklahoma, possibly even Kansas. How about the brain amoeba stuff in the water that you're getting now down in Texas where, you know, it takes a unique situation where like someone's water skiing and they hit the water and then the amoeba gets in their brain and there's no cure. They're done. That was a Central American problem. That was not something that happened that much up here. And now all of a sudden it's happened regularly in Texas. And as a matter of fact, I think it's spreading to other states as well. You have, I mean, I don't know what else you can say. I mean, the people that keep just have decided to jam their fingers in their ears, close their eyes as tight as they can and scream, I can't hear you, I can't hear you. They are completely ignoring the fact that, I mean, we don't have birch trees growing in Minneapolis, St. Paul anymore. Sure, they grow up north, but have you seen a birch tree growing down here? It looks god-awful.
It doesn't look like they used to look. It looks like that sprayed bark that doesn't look very good at all. Gray foxes, you used to never see gray foxes north of Mille Lacs, and now it's pretty much the dominant species. The moose are pretty much gone from Minnesota. And at the same time, you have you got snakes, you have the expansion of snakes, you got crops that can't grow nearly as well as they used to. I don't quite know what it takes for people to start realizing that we have broken the earth. But my guess is going to be is when it becomes something so apparent that even they can't deny it anymore, they're going to be the ones screaming at the top of their lungs, "Some people want to play the blame game, but I'm looking for solutions now." I think we should make them move to Phoenix. When it's 140 degrees down there, you can tell us how nice the weather is. I'm getting very little tolerance for you people because your ignorance is the problem, not the solution. And I get it. Your ignorance gets you praise on Twitter, but that's the only place it gets you praise. 952-946-6205. I'm going to handicap Tom Emery here in just a second on whether or not he's got a chance at the speaker's role. I don't think he does. We'll talk about that in a second. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
This is Chad, owner of AM950, here to tell you about the exterior construction company I trust, Snap Construction. If your home was hit with the most recent storms, trust the most well-reviewed exterior construction company, Snap Construction, for a free home inspection.
This is Ryan, owner of Snap Construction. There are a lot of great construction companies in town. My advice is to take your time and do your research. Make sure they are locally owned and that they guarantee their craftsmanship for life. Also, you want to find a company that's been in business for at least 10 years. You want to work with a company that's going to be there long after the work is done. Snap Construction has handled thousands of claims, and we'll help you through the process.
Don't go with the out-of-town, fly-by-night contractor. Most storm damage goes missed by the untrained eye. Trust Snap Construction for your free storm damage evaluation. For your free storm damage evaluation, call Snap Construction at 612-333-SNAP or visit them online at snapconstruction.com. That's 612-333-SNAP. Or snapconstruction.com.
I love my Toyota vehicles, so when I have to get service done, there's only one place I go. Rudy Luther Toyota. They know Toyota's inside and out. It starts with them checking your alignment and tire treads with their Hunter Quick Check Drive Inspection Service. Oil changes, tires, batteries, wipers, no matter what you need done, they can help you with reliable Toyota parts and the best service team in Minnesota. Check out their website, RudyLutherToyota.com, for service and parts specials just for Toyota vehicles. Get your Toyota serviced at Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Think your company's safe? Your staff is working from home, right? As I speak, cyber criminals are mounting attacks across the country. Remember, when we're weakest, cyber criminals attack. Hi, Mark Sommerfeld from Rimark. The Rimark team is guiding our clients through these difficult times. In fact, demand has been so high, we created an easy-to-follow guide. It's yours free. Download our 5 steps to securely work from home now at RimarkIT.com or call 651-328-8900 for a no-cost how-to discussion.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Once again, Matt Robeson's going to be joining us here coming up in the 4 o'clock hour and just in about 10, 15 minutes from night now. Jeremy Norton's going to be joining us. Trauma Sponges is his book, Dispatches from the Scarred Heart of Emergency Response. He's kind enough to talk about that as well. There's a lot of question here. There's a lot of people in the Twin Cities media that are bringing up Tom Emery's going to be speaker. Tom Emery's. I don't think Tom Emery's got a chance of being speaker. I don't think Tom Emmer's got a chance at being speaker for one very simple reason. He is not part of that MAGA crew, and they are as close as they are ever going to get to being able to have a say in the MAGA side in how politics are done. I think the days of Trump is floundering at this point. I think that there's no way in the world they're going to win the Senate. I don't think they're not going to have enough MAGA guys over there. They have a few, Tuberville and Rand Paul, but who's the Zodiac killer from Texas? Him. Anyway, Ted Cruz. I've heard a rumor that he is the Zodiac killer. Anyway, but you've got the House, and even though that the MAGA Republicans don't have them, even the majority of the Republicans, they have got themselves in a situation where they feel as if they can force themselves in the leadership. And trust me, I think the ultimate goal here is the ultimate goalie in regards to helping out Trump try to become president again. That even if the election is overwhelming against Trump, they'll just say, oh, we feel as if there's some fraud. We're not going to prove it. We just say it is. We're going to throw this out the election, and we're going to go send it to the House where they hope they'll have enough of the majority there. And, yeah, and good luck in the streets at that point. I think this country will implode at that point if they try to do this. But this is what they're trying to do. I could talk more on this. Let's play Scott McFarlane from CBS News. He has a great little segment here. That he's got posted on Twitter. I want to go ahead, Patrick, air this.
Hey, it's Scott McFarlane. So if you're putting together a resume for a big new job, what do you include? How far back do you go? Because the candidates running to be the next U.S. Speaker of the House, second in line to the presidency, may have to talk about what happened nearly 3 years ago. Were they part of the group that tried to reject the electors in the 2020 election? Did they try to decertify that election? Because of the 9 candidates so far, all of whom are men, all of whom are part of that conservative Republican study committee, 7 of the 9 voted to decertify the election. And over the course of this weekend, one of the 2 who didn't, Tom Emmer, Republican whip from Minnesota, has been taking some heat from some Trump loyalists, like Steve Bannon, who called him a Trump hater. Indicating that this, nearly 1,100 days later, is still an issue, a pivotal issue, in a Republican vote, in a Republican election. So, perhaps no surprise, Team Tom Emmer is pushing back hard at this, saying that Emmer endorsed Trump in 2016 and 2020, was among the first to do so, that they've been doing outreach to MAGA world through this weekend as they try to lock down the necessary support to win the speakership. But to be clear, when Jim Jordan was the candidate for Republicans to be speaker, he also continued to raise rhetorical questions about 2020, saying there were things he was concerned about the election, this issue, these baseless election claims, and this type of what Democrats call election denialism remains vibrant, not just here at the Capitol, but down at the court, where January 6th defendants are having their cases closed, one of whom recently was sentenced by the judge. And as he walked out of the courtroom, said, Trump won. It's still an issue. It's still a thing.
Well, because this is all they've got. And the MAGA side of the Republican Party in the House will not accept someone who is not a full-throated, Joe Biden didn't actually win the election, Republican as the speaker. They're just not going to accept that. And this is why I think that Tom Emmer's got no chance. Now, I don't think any of the candidates are stupid enough to do what McCarthy did and allow one Republican to call for a vacate vote in the Senate, in the House. I don't think anyone's going to ever allow that to happen again because Matt Gaetz has basically caused irreparable damage to the Republican brand. But in my mind, this is just even more damage where all you have is Republicans who, and trust me, and we talked to Stephanie Miller last week before she did the Sexy Liberal show. This is a slow motion continuation of this. These people are not giving up. They still feel as if installing a president is more patriotic than electing one. And they don't care. They have pledged allegiance to Trump, Uber, Alles. And we've seen this play out over the centuries, where all of a sudden it's not the country, it's the individual. And it never ends well. It never ends well. So the only thing I can think of, and I was kind of going back and forth in regards to what we do here with this, and how do the Republicans get away from this? Because I still think I don't think Emmer's going to win. I don't think anyone else is on that list has got the votes. I think what's going to happen is they're going to get close to the government shutting down, and they're basically going to say, you know, we will evict you from the House if you do not allow us to put McCarthy back in as Speaker. That's, I guess, the guess. The only other option they've got is 20 or so Republicans just basically say, this is not the Republican Party I inherited. I'm going to vote. You know, I'm going to make a deal, strike a deal with the Democrats to put a, you know, probably not put Hakeem Jeffries in, but put a moderate Republican in with them. And I mean, that will send the Republican MAGA Republicans into a fury, not because of the grand injustice, but because once again, here they are. They are a vast minority in this country, but because of the system that they have created, they have placed themselves in the position to not only control the House, but to as well try to determine who the next president of the United States is going to be. And they don't care about the election. They just care about installing whoever they want to. So that's where they're at. I don't know where this goes. But, I mean, if you're asking me to handicap the chances of Tom Emmer to become the Speaker, it's clear that the MAGA Republicans, including Trump, and he called Trump. I mean, I was reading the story today. He called Trump on Saturday. Within a few hours, Trump was telling his henchmen to make sure Emmer is not the Speaker. How many votes does it take? Six? He's not going to become the Speaker. He just is not going to become the Speaker. And I don't know how you get out of this mess for them. But, I mean, every day, I mean, it is hilarious to watch the weekend news shows. It's hilarious to watch the weekend news shows and watch these Republicans come on out there and say, these Democrats have really destroyed what's going on in the House. And every host saying, what are you talking about? This isn't the Democrats. This is you guys. And they just, they cannot explain their own incompetence. Because the reality is they're a broken party and they're not going to be able to fix themselves without the help of their Democrats. But just demanding the Democrats vote for a candidate is not how you're going to do that. I do not think Tom Emmer is going to be the next Speaker of the House. I could be wrong. Considering how much Trump seems to be working against him behind the scenes, I just don't think there's a chance. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. When we come on back, Jeremy Norton's going to join us. Trauma Sponges is the book. We'll talk to him when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hey, Twin Cities, it's Latunji from Latunji's Palette. We're celebrating 5 years in business. Latunji's Palette. It's a place for gourmet pastries, sandwiches, drinks, and so much more. Come on over and visit us at 1400 Park Avenue South. Feel the connection of food and community. Also, we want you to look for our famous peach cobbler and other gourmet goodies at Eastside Food Co-op, Hy-Vee, Lunds and Barley's, North Market, and more. Learn more at latunjispalette.com, where we're built with purpose, fortified with love.
Hi, I'm Scott Chambaud from Chambaud Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, shame-free dental office. We know dental anxiety and dental phobia are real. We'll take the time to get to know you and give you what you need to be comfortable at all times. We offer free nitrous oxide laughing gas and have high-tech options to help you feel calm and relaxed during your appointments. We'll help you get through every appointment in the most pain-free way possible. If you're having a dental emergency, we'll try and get you in the same day you call because we don't like to see anyone in pain. As my daughter Rachel says,
if you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get.
This is Chad, owner of AM950. I've been going to Chambaud Family Dentistry for years. They get me in last minute when I'm in pain and make regular checkups easy and comfortable.
Chamblatt Family Dentistry in Hopkins and St. Paul. Find them online at ChamblattFamilyDentistry.com or call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH.
Hey, it's Tom. Going solar is a great way to save on energy costs. By using the sun to power your house, you can feel good about an investment that will last for years. All Energy Solar is a locally trusted turnkey solar installer that's been around since 2009. They provide custom designs and quality installations of solar panel systems that work for your energy needs. One of the best parts about going solar is it's an investment that can pay for itself. Your system can pay back 100% of the installation cost in as little as 8 years. Plus, a system from All Energy Solar can pay back over 300% of its cost over its lifetime. There's also many tax incentives and rebates available, and the experts at All Energy Solar can walk you through the entire process to make sure you're saving as much as possible. So go green, both financially and environmentally, with All Energy Solar. Get a free, no-obligation assessment from All Energy Solar by calling 800-620-3370 or visiting allenergysolar.com.
With a look at your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lilia. Sunshine today with a high of 54, then a chance of showers tonight with a low of 52. The Tunji's Palette is a social enterprise business built with purpose and fortified with love. Discover the best peach cobbler in the world at Latunji's Palette, 1400 Park Avenue South in Minneapolis. Visit the website at latunjispalette.com.
Now someone that's asked me what my percentage is. 8%. That's what I think the chance. 8% is out of 100 is what I think Tom Emmer's got to become the next speaker. I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm saying it's very unlikely. Because if the MAGA side of the party is working against him, he does not have a chance. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Jeremy Norton is a firefighter EMT with the Minneapolis Fire Department. He is the current captain. Head Station 17 in South Minneapolis. He has a book out, Trauma Sponges, Dispatches from the Scarred Heart of Emergency Response. He's kind enough today to join us to talk about the book. Jeremy, thank you very much. I appreciate the time, Captain.
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. Good to be here.
A quick question for you. Was your crew involved in the Kmart on Friday when that was burning? Were you guys out there as well?
I mean, did we start it? No, we did not start
it. No,
it actually was my crew first in. I was off on Friday. I was actually in Detroit. But yeah, my crew was the first crew on scene there.
Well, thank you guys. You guys do a great job. And you know, the thing which is funny is, as you know, Some organizations, some entities within Minneapolis, their reputation is not as stellar as it could be. But I don't know a person in Minneapolis that doesn't love the firefighters and love what you guys do, because they do understand the effort that you guys put in. And I'm one of them. I think firefighters are great. So thank you for everything that you do every single day.
Oh, I appreciate that. I think all three branches of the emergency services, you know, the police, the paramedics, and fire, are all, you know, generally well regarded on an individual level, but collectively, I think one of the three of us has been having a kind of tough run of it. But and the paramedics, I think, are misunderstood for everything that they provide. So firefighters just have a big truck, so we get recognized easily.
Well, yeah, you do a lot of things, and as a matter of fact, that's actually a major theme of this book, is that you talk about, I mean, this idea that the firefighters, EMTs, that, you know, I think you mentioned it's like 20% of the time you guys are dealing with fires. The rest of the time you're dealing with other things. And that is a, you know, you try to give a much more thorough and rounded view of what exactly the job curtails.
That's correct. I try to offer to the public, to anyone who reads the book, and understanding, you know, not just of what we do, but that we are part, I mean, as I just said, like we're one of the three, kind of the tripod of emergency services that are pretty much the only option that most city 911 systems have. So for all the random calls that go into a 911 call center in Minneapolis and equally in St. Paul, Duluth, Red Wing, Detroit, anywhere across the country in cities and towns, you know, with full-time departments, the firefighters go to, you know, fire calls, hazmat calls, but all we assist and work with the paramedics in many times, so that all the 911 calls that are, you know, at all medically based, those fill up our days and nights. And I think there's a good reason for that, because we're centrally located. The stations are set up around town so we can get anywhere quickly. And if somebody is having a critical emergency, which is the purpose of the 911 system, you want people to get there quickly to stop the bleeding or restart the heart or to carry someone to safety. You know, what I try to push in the book is that we're not stealing work from anyone else. It's just that there is no one else. And so many of the calls that police, fire, and paramedics respond on, you know, aren't actually, you know, life or death or critical emergencies, but there is no other place for the calls to go. Like, so I try to look at the systemic across the board and look at how that then filters down to shape and influence and affect the individuals.
And by the way, I can attest to this. In December, I got hit by a drunk driver. It broke my back. And when the trooper got there, he basically said, well, it's going to be, we are a shortage of ambulances right now. So I'll get one out here as quickly as I can. But I had both Eden Prairie and Minnetonka Fire show up. And the chiefs came up to me and said, you know, I don't want you moving. They're checking me over. You're not bleeding. Don't move. Wait for the EMTs. And that was it. And they were that first line of response because not because of a failure or anything, but just, you know, there wasn't anyone else to be there until an ambulance got there.
Right. And now that's and those are kind of the structural challenges. And it's not like any city we live in, we tend to think that our issues are singular, like that kind of myopic view. But, you know, I've traveled to see family on both coasts over the past couple of years. The kind of societal strain is happening across the country because of, you know, a lot of issues with our healthcare system and the financial imperatives that are driving for-profit hospitals and the ambulance services. And so there are fewer people doing the work to address more and more calls, you know, and that's kind of the other part of what I really am trying to write or to address in this book is to show the complicated nobility of a career in emergency services, because it isn't just the stuff we think it is when we join. There's so many layers and it's so much more complicated. And a piece, you know, the parts that take a piece out of our heart and really weigh us down are not in any of the manuals we might study while we're in rookie school or cadet school, you know, we still haven't found a good way to address that because these calls keep coming in. People like you keep getting hit by cars. Somebody has to show up, and that somebody is us.
You talked about the training that goes into this. You know, obviously they talk a lot about this, but does it prepare them for the rookies that are coming in? The amount of this is going to be there? Because, I mean, obviously there is a tremendously human response factor needed by anyone who's in, you could get called for drug overdose, medical emergency, fire situation, car into a house, whatever the case may be. You know, it's almost the empathy has to almost be on par with the strength and the courage to go along with it. You have to have this large ability to address whatever circumstance you walk into. How does the training process that and prepare the rookies for that?
Yeah, I think honestly I don't think it's really teachable, you know, and that is one of the challenges. I mean, I write in the book that, you know, you think about police officers and paramedics and firefighters. We all join our respective careers. I mean, I will say here in defense of my firefighters, the police and paramedics just haven't taken the fire or scored well in the firefighter test, so they have to go to the other careers. or maybe they actually like Law and Order better more than just being a bunch of deranged boys.
Captain, don't worry about that. I'm an Army guy. We used to make fun of the Marines, what? Navy, Air Force all day long. Don't worry, it's tongue in cheek, guys. No offense meant. It's an inside joke for you, okay?
But in all seriousness, you know, the paramedics are very highly trained pre-hospital technicians. They can, you know, they can intubate, they can provide medications, they can do all this really amazing stuff on like a rolling, cramped, you know, emergency theater, operating theater on wheels. Police officers are drawn, you know, for a sense of law and order, protecting the public. You know, firefighters want to fight fire and whatnot. And there's nowhere really that we get genuine preparation for all the things that almost fall under kind of a social work umbrella without any social work training. And, you know, you said empathy. And I think that's really important, because too many people put up a wall to protect themselves from the squalor and the suffering and all the hard stuff we see. But that puts a break between, like, the human connection gets lost. You know, and I think the other part of it is if we're blindly empathetic, you know, we won't make it till lunchtime, because all three of these are careers that are steeped in the suffering of other people, right? Every day, any of the emergency responders go to work, we are responding to people having often their worst or last days of life. Mm-hmm. Plus all the other just, you know, the routine maladies and bad, you know, a broken ankle is a bummer, but it's not fatal, mm-hmm. right? You know, so it's all the other stuff, but it is, they're very, very, you know, few, like, sunny, happy calls that I write about in the book, because there really are precious few things that are objectively peppy or happy, right? Yeah. And so being able to make peace with that and carry on and find meaning in the world is kind of each of our individual challenge.
You talked about the calls you get called in on. I mean, talk about a little bit more about you two specific calls, which, I mean, have fallen down to you, fire departments and paramedics at times, which are drug overdoses, mental health situations. These are both cases where, you know, you're as you say, you're not social workers. You haven't been, you know, necessarily given the training of this sort of thing, but you're having to be that frontline contact in cases here where you might be dealing with a drug overdose, you might be dealing with someone having a mental health crisis. And I can't imagine that's something that's easy. You know, you have to kind of go through that a few times to understand what you need to do.
Yeah, great. I think, well, let's just distinguish those two quickly, because the drug overdose, you know, is pretty objective and academic. You know, we just, like, our job is to assess the person, you know, recognize that they are, you know, in respiratory collapse, respiratory failure, provide oxygen, ventilate them, take their vitals, you know, and then provide Narcan or assist the paramedics as they do it, right? So that's a pretty simple call. However, the sociological aspects of that, and the fact that we are going and finding people every possible nook and cranny in our city where people are, or now where they're just doing, you know, there are a lot more open air shooting galleries where we're finding people just, you know, splayed out on Bloomington Ave, you know, that we respond, and it's taxing, it's emotionally wearing, but that work is not, you know, that is not that complicated, right? It's draining, and it's a hard look at people struggling. The mental illness piece is, I think, the one where, as a nation, we are really in a jam, because, you know, since the 70s and 80s, when kind of a well-meant change to how we treated and confined people with mental illnesses, you know, led a lot of people out of institutions, but the intended support, the medication, the family therapy, all those other things went away. So that's when we started seeing the legions of unhoused or homeless and folks with mental illness in very complicated cases. You know, if you don't have access to your meds and you're living on the street or in a shelter under a bridge, that's going to lead to a much more precarious mental stability. So then we end up seeing people having acute crises on the streets. And often those are called in as distress calls or possible threat calls. So the language and terminology that people, well-meaning or otherwise, start a call with, because dispatch doesn't challenge really what they're told. They take it, you know, with the Good Samaritan principle that everyone's trying to do the right thing, which means then that we roll in, the police, fire, and paramedics, to something that might be completely different from what we've actually got, which is somebody who is under narcotics, having a mental breakdown, diabetic, someone who's with Alzheimer's or any sort of, like, the range of possible kind of disassociative or kind of mental struggles are vast, and we don't get much training at all for that. And those have led to a lot of very avoidable but tragic, unnecessary deaths of civilians.
Jeremy Norton is joining us. Trauma Sponges is the book. I want to, there is obviously a frustration that you deal with in regards to how you deal with the crisis and then how other agencies deal with the crisis. There's one here in the chapter about ketamine or Killaman where you're talking about you arrive, you're dealing with a guy who is high. He was in an accident there. You're working with him. Then, you know, you're getting them there. You're getting him to the hospital. As soon as you get to the hospital, four guards jump on him. You know, and it just their response is clearly very different than your response was as you're trying to deal with this. And you're talking about how, you know, you obviously you can't get into anyone else's lane, but you also there's got to be a level of frustration where you get to a point there and it seems like the good work that you have done has just been unraveled.
Right. And that, you know, and that was a case from, you know, that was, you know, and everything I write about in the book, except for things that are kind of legal, you know, matter of legal or public record, you know, are all kind of elisions and, you know, and conflations, because I'm never going to kind of spill the beans on any actual people we saw. But the other part is that we've seen enough of these repetitive calls that it's easy to kind of make a pastiche. What we know now versus what we knew, you know, a decade ago, or actually 15, 16 years ago, when I think the call that I actually was on that I based that on, you know, that we didn't understand that somebody who was under a stimulant like a PCP or a meth, they're unreachable. Right. So we really don't have many options. You know, we can try to be chill. We can try to be clever. But really, and shouting doesn't work. Shouting continues not to work. Right. And when you've got to physically restrain somebody for their own protection, say with a head injury or they might run into traffic, that we now are better understanding that can lead somebody into kind of a respiratory overstimulation, respiratory collapse, respiratory arrest. Or going into acidosis, where they're fighting so hard that they're, you know, but they're not unable to move, that they actually essentially poison their own blood, which is how across the country, many people have died while in custody with no one, like without anybody holding them down. Although sometimes that has also happened, right? Mm-hmm. But also we misconceive or misconstrue this notion of he's fighting. Right. So the man that we were trying to bring to the hospital was thrashing, but he was incoherent. He wasn't fighting anyone. He was fighting the ghost in his head.
Yeah.
But the guards saw that and took it as their duty to stop and quell and control. And that's what leads to people dying. And that's where I think the education piece to understand. And then I want to stress on the backside of that. You really don't have anything other than sedatives with somebody who is a danger to themselves, and that becomes a loaded topic for a lot of the liability factor for paramedics.
Well, and you're just in what you just described there is the complexities you have to deal with, which makes this a fairly compelling book for sure. I'm going to mention the chapter, which is in You Yourself, and I'm going to read the title of the chapter and then the one thing you put here. The assassination of George Floyd by the coward Derek Chauvin, and you put at the bottom of that, I recognize this chapter might be a draw the reader of the book, but I suggest reading the chapter 12, which I mentioned there, and chapter 14 for a larger context there. The reality is that you are dealing with such thickly multi-layered situations and issues that as you talk about on all this stuff, there is never an easy call. There is never an easy solution, but you also have to be a witness to what is going on around you, such as that chapter about George Floyd.
Yes.
Yeah. That is, it's an eye-opening view because I think, especially if anyone is thinking about entering the fire department or EMT, that they should read this book probably because I think it will give them a better idea of what they're in store for.
I clearly wrote the book for more than just, you know, my poor children who have to listen to me process this crap all the time. I would hope that it would be beneficial, informative for people who are interested, you know. But honestly, I also really want to help the public understand kind of the crisis in our healthcare system. So everything that you and I have talked about in the past 10 minutes in terms of kind of emergency response and what's happening on the streets. But the other part you know, is what's happening in the homes, that the way that our healthcare system works means that, you know, not so much police officers, but, you know, paramedics and firefighters often end up as the kind of primary care for lots of people as we get, get folks from wherever we find them to the emergency room, you know, and that also that our disconnect, our cultural disconnect from the end of life realities means that firefighters and, you know, firefighter EMTs and paramedics are in folks' in people's homes with people who are clearly dying, and their families have been unable to wrap their heads around that, and the doctors have been unwilling to explain that, you know, stage four cancer is terminal by definition. Yeah. Like there isn't going to be a miracle, you know, there isn't going to be a miracle survival. People may last longer than you think, which is why the docs don't want to run into people's denial by saying, likely you'll be dead in 6 weeks or 6 months, right? They avoid that, but they know it's coming, and the families don't hear that second part of it. And so we end up responding to homes, and I take one look, my crew takes a look at the paramedics, and we know that somebody is clearly dying, and the best thing would be for them to be on hospice, you know, on a beautiful fall day like this, to sit by the window and watch the leaves change as they take their final breaths, because there's nothing that the hospital is going to do to truly prolong their life in any quality of life manner.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's the breakdown. And that's, you know, and that's what we talk about, a lot of the moral injury that, you know, that have been kind of besetting the emergency medicine and hospital staffs, you know, for years, but particularly through COVID and afterwards, mm-hmm. is bearing witness to this sort of helplessness and all the suffering and death that we are intimately connected to and yet helpless to change.
Captain, I got to have to end it there because I'm running out of time. Captain, yes, for sir. Station 17 in Minneapolis, it is Jeremy Norton, the book Trauma Sponges, Dispatches from the Scarred Heart of Emergency Response. Captain, a great book. All my best. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the time today.
Well, hey, thank you so much for having me on. You take care of yourself, okay? And I hope your back doesn't give you trouble.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Captain. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. The Park Tavern is your go-to destination for fun. Your friends and your family will have a great time with the fantastic food like the pizzas, appetizers, burgers, entrees, and sandwiches, the best bowling in Minnesota, the wildly popular outdoor patio, great drink specials, all the big games on their numerous screens, and it's the perfect place for your next private event, even large gatherings for over 200. The Park Tavern is your go-to destination for everyone age 1 to 100. Come see for yourself. Have fun at the Park Tavern, Louisiana Avenue, north of Highway 7 in St. Louis Park.
Would you let animals pick your insurance? You really need to experience mayhem to get the best rates? Or how about a celebrity quarterback or fake university saving you money? There's a lot of marketing stunts when it comes to insurance, but what you really need is someone looking out for you. Call Array Insurance, and they will work hard to find you the best insurance coverage and rates. So avoid gimmicks and call Cheryl at Array, 763-504-3067 or arrayinsurance.com. Array Insurance, working hard for you.
It's an absolute must for any true foodie. Vinaigrette at 50th and Xerxes in South Minneapolis offers premium oils and vinegars for the most discriminating of tastes. This is Sarah Piepenberg, owner of Vinaigrette. We bottle on-site, there's no guesswork, and you get to taste test each and every oil and vinegar we offer. Our direct relationship with the growers ensures an uncompromised level of satisfaction. When you need to know you're cooking with the finest ingredients, first contact the independently owned Vinaigrette, 50th and Xerxes in South Minneapolis. Online at vinaigrettemn.com.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's Matt McNeil Show. That last point that the captain was making was, I think, one of the most important ones, which is, you know, I understand it's hard for doctors to kind of try to convey to someone how serious something is. But if they don't, somebody else has to. And you're then putting undue pressure on firefighters, EMTs, to have to be that source of information. And that's not, I don't think that should be their job. It is an incredibly complex profession, and I highly recommend the book. Check out the book, Jeremy Norton, it's Trauma Sponges. Hour two of the show, that's coming up next.
Hi, this is Frank Brown, owner of Minuteman Press Uptown, Minnesota's only minority-owned union printing company. And I have big news. We've moved. Our new building in North Minneapolis is much larger with state-of-the-art equipment. That means we can get your projects done faster. We're on Washington Avenue North off I-94 at the Dowling exit, which allows for quick pickup and drop-off with plenty of free parking. And yes, we still print everything. I moved to MP Uptown because as a black business owner, I want to be in North Minneapolis and help provide jobs. At MP Uptown, we pay above living wages, hire people who have made mistakes in the past, and believe in social justice. We have over 175 Google reviews with a 5-star rating. Let us handle your next print project because when you support our business, you support the community. Call 612-870-0770.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News.